You ready?
It's time to start.
This should be played at high volume.
This is the Andrea Shea Game Show.
And I'm just a gal like any other gal.
That's cool.
You know what this is.
What is this?
The Andrea Shea King Show.
It's me, don't you remember?
We were just talking about you.
Totally amazing.
Thank you.
The Andrea Shea King Show.
I think you've got something there.
Andrea Shea King.
You're really going to like it.
Quite understandable.
Is on the air.
Something's definitely going on here.
Take my word for it.
Now.
Come on. It's showtime.
Make it so.
Ready, go.
Nice to have some time to spend with you this evening. We're going to be talking with Oleg Adbashian a little bit at the bottom of the hour. He is the founder and the brains behind a website called The People's Cube. The People's Cube is now 7 years old, and boy, is it popular. Very, very popular. So he's going to be joining us. We're going to talk with him about that. We're also going to be talking with him about something that is very current right now. And that, of course, is the Obama campaign's new slogan, Forward. And, boy, I'll tell you, this has so many references to Marxist origins. I'm sure that Oleg will have something to say about that, but you've heard of it, I'm sure. Okay, what's so significant about that, and why would the left, in one instance, purposely choose a word that's code-speak among Marxists, and then go out of its way to hide all reference to that fact later on? You know, scrubbing Wikipedia. Well, that question still isn't answered, but circulating the Internet right now are myriad Soviet and Maoist propaganda posters that show hard-hitting insight into just how meaningful this word forward truly is. And he moved here to the United States in 1994, and we'll get him to talk about this. When he was in the Ukraine, he sometimes worked as a propaganda artist for the old Soviet Union. He created these agitprop posters for the local party committee in a small town in which he lived. He says during that time, he witnessed the transition of the republics of the Soviet Union from corrupt socialism to corrupt kleptocracy. And when he got here in the United States, he says he was puzzled by the level of delusional affection for all things left among the liberal intellectual elites who take America's exclusive well-being for granted. But at that time, Oleg kind of just dismissed it as silly, and maybe this delusional affection that people had for the left was of little consequence until 9/11. And then he saw how absolutely dangerous the left and their leftist philosophy is to this country. Just amazing. So anyway, when he comes on board, when he joins us, we're going to get him to talk about that. All right, we have a caller on the line, and I have a funny feeling I know who this is. Is this Mr. Oleg?
Yes.
Mr. Oleg, you're calling in at 10:17. We wanted you at 9:30. You're late, but we're glad you're here. How are you this evening?
I was making pictures for the People's Cube, drawing away, and I looked at the clock and I realized that, you know, I was waiting to call you, but I got too carried away. That's the story of my life. I'm getting too carried away with the Cube.
Oh, well, you know what? We've got about 10 minutes. 10 minutes. I really wanted to spend a whole lot of time with you, but I'm so glad you're with us. Oleg, tell us, first of all, you came to this country. I was telling the folks that you came to this country, and you were just absolutely shocked to see the cavalier attitude that people had, that they were leftist, and they were just like, you were like, what is this? And you kind of disregarded it, but then when we got hit on 9/11, you really snapped too. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, you know, when I grew up in the Soviet Union, I was fooled by the official propaganda, believing that socialism and communism are the only way. And gradually I grew out of that idea and understood what was really going on. And then I come to America expecting to see the land of liberty, and I see so many people craving socialism. And at first I thought it was just a silly trend, but after 9/11 I realized that it's really dangerous because they were appeasing the terrorists. And they, when I started arguing with my former leftist friends, I didn't realize they were leftists. I just thought they were regular Americans who told me that there are some weird conservatives out there, but they're not worth even thinking about. They're kind of a dying breed. And then when I started arguing with them after 9/11, they started calling me a conservative, an extremist, a religious fanatic, and all kind of things. And I decided to discover what those evil conservatives really are. So I found some of them, and I thought that they're much more intelligent and witty and educated, informed people than the leftists. So I'm sticking with this crowd now, you know, conservatives, okay. Libertarians. You know, satire is in my blood. I've been always doing humor and satire, even when I lived in the USSR, although it was hardly ever published. Thank God for
that. I want to talk with you about that a little bit because I'm fascinated. I was telling the listeners that when I was on the Tea Party Express National Tour last fall, I met a gentleman who toured with us part of the way on his own dime, who was from the Ukraine. And he came to this country as a laborer and, you know, built his own business construction, which has completely been demolished because of the housing collapse. And he had a message to tell everybody. When we would make our stops, we would do our different Tea Party rallies. He was out there with a hard hat on and a scrolled piece of paper with him that was the U.S. Constitution, and he was literally begging the people that were there, please, please, fight for your country. You have no idea what you have here in America. You came from the Ukraine as well, and you, while you were there, you were working as a propaganda artist for the old Soviet Union. Tell us about that. I mean, was that something that you were you believed in, or was this something that you were forced to do?
I wasn't forced to do it. It was just a job for the money. It was the only game in town, actually. And a lot of artists who didn't find any other outlet would have to work in that field. But the attitude was pretty cynical. The party boss who directed me was also pretty cynical about the whole thing. He didn't care much. The propaganda was produced centrally. Special brochures, special catalogs were developed. And so my boss and I would look at the catalog, pick the design, the poster that I needed to recreate in a larger format, and that was what I did. And there were some funny stories about that I can tell if we have time.
I've extended the show, so we have time. We can talk. I've extended the show for another half hour, a little bit more than a half hour, so we've got plenty of time now.
Okay, great. Sorry for the delay. Well, actually, in Ukraine, I had a different job. I worked as a motivational propaganda artist in Siberia, where I lived for 3 years. That was my stay
there. Oh, wow.
And the paints were pretty scarce, and they gave me a big barrel of blue paints that was all frozen. You know, you can imagine that in Siberia, paint.
Yeah.
So nobody, the construction workers didn't want it, so they gave it to me. And at some point, Brezhnev died at the time, and his portraits were all over the country at some point. There was this kind of deliberate artificial cult of personality in which nobody believed. They were trying to create Brezhnev's cult of personality, just like the left is now trying to do it with Obama. People were pretty cynical again, and everybody laughed at Brezhnev. There were more jokes about Brezhnev than about anything else. Than about mothers-in-law. After his death, for about a year, his portraits were everywhere because it would be, too straightforward, too open to everybody if his portraits would be dismantled right away. So the pretense of decency was maintained for some time, but then my boss told me, okay, it's time to take down Brezhnev and something, but those new leaders that the country had were dying one after another also. So who knew? It was the time of Andropov. Chernenko died like a year or two after Brezhnev, then Andropov died. Then Gorbachev came to power, and at first he didn't seem different from anybody else. So that's when my boss told me to create some. We had a large poster in front of the company office, and it had the picture of Brezhnev. So my boss told me to change it with something, but something without the expiration date, like a picture of Lenin. Lenin will always be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Which shows a picture of Lenin, who is pointing his hand and saying, you're going the right way, comrades, meaning towards communism. And so I used the frozen blue paint to cover Brezhnev, then I painted Lenin on top of that. And after a month, the blue paint started to fade away. And the blue face of Brezhnev started seeping through the Lenin's face, like ghosts from the past, and Lenin's face opened and started. So there were kind of two merging ghosts, semi-transparent, that were saying, like coming from the underworld to take us with them. You're going the right way, comrades. Follow us.
Wow.
As for being a real artist, if you were not part of the artist union, I heard from some Americans that how great it is that there is an artist union, the old government subsidized, you know, like the NEA, and so those artists have a great life. Yeah, those who are members of the artist union, they had special apartments and the special studios that the government gave them. But they were restricted in what they could do. They could mostly what they did was paint portraits of the heroes of socialist labor, workers, dairy workers, farmers, who were whom the party decided to show to turn into poster boys and girls of socialism. That's basically what they did. Or they had to paint portraits of leaders, Communist Party leaders, and stuff like that. Unsurprisingly, a lot of them were alcoholics. So
I was going to ask you if I could just jump in here. These artists in the artists union who were restricted to painting portraits of, you know, the heroes, the Soviet heroes, and the I guess it would be the proletariat, I guess. Were they in harmony with this? Is this, I mean, did they believe in this philosophy, or as you're saying, a lot of them were alcoholics because maybe they didn't?
But you know, towards the end, why do you think the Soviet Union collapsed so easily without any resistance, or very little resistance rather? Because most people didn't believe in it in socialism anymore. Nobody took it seriously. It was a joke towards the end. You know, the most common joke was they pretend they're paying us and we will pretend that we're working. That was the kind of the spirit of the time, the zeitgeist. The artists were drinking a lot, and a friend of mine who was also an artist advised me to, if I needed, if you are not a member of the artist union, you couldn't get artistic paints or art supplies, brushes, paints, thinners, and canvas and stuff like that, primers. That could be bought at a special artist union store, and they wouldn't sell it to me because I didn't have an artist union card.
Why didn't you have an artist union card?
They wouldn't take me. That was a different thing because there was a special selection there. I wouldn't be fit to be a member of the artist union.
You weren't in with the right crowd.
You needed to be politically correct. You needed to be right. Yeah.
And even back then you were not.
On the party, you needed to be on the party good side. I wasn't. You see how all these gifts from the government lead to rationing. So if there was a scarcity of something, of course only special people would have access to it. And that was another way to encourage people to stick with the system and remain on the good side of the party, because without that, you would lose access to the distribution system. That's how it worked. Mm-hmm. It worked with art, with healthcare, with education, with housing, whatever the government would give to you, provide to you for free or very cheaply. There was always a price to pay for that. Mostly mm-hmm. those were economic traps. I can expand on that later. But back to art. I couldn't buy art supplies, so a friend advised me, vodka was always hard currency in the Soviet Union. So he told me, why don't you get a few bottles of vodka and knock on the doors of those art studios, and those artists would be happy to trade their art supplies for vodka. And that's what I did. That's how I replenished my supplies. That's how I was able to do my art, trading those supplies for vodka.
So vodka was the currency. That was the currency you used, vodka.
Yeah, right. That was before the dollars became hard currency, which is now the heavy currency as well. But you see, owning hard rubles were never in fashion. Owning hard foreign currency was a crime. If you had dollars in the times of the rule of the Communist Party, you would get a visit from the KGB. And a very strict conversation with them. And if you were selling them, you would go to jail. Rubles were also not the strongest currency because under socialism, when everything is rationed, it's not the money that defines your status. It's your connections. It's where you stand in the bureaucratic hierarchy, is who you know, and access to the distribution system is the key. So you, if you are, for instance, in the trade selling government-subsidized furniture that is not, that is in short supply, then you will decide who gets the furniture and who doesn't. And of course, just remember how Blagojevich said that he wasn't going to just give Obama's seat to anybody. He wanted to be paid for them. The same thing happened in the Soviet Union. It's just people are the same all over. It's just the system that forces them to act like that. And they would, if it's in scarce supply, then people would want favors for giving something that didn't belong to them. It was the government's. And so they would give that furniture to somebody who, for instance, decided who gets into college and who doesn't. Because, again, education is free, but there's a contest who gets there. And so money also decided, or not money, but rather your connections and favors. So a place in college for somebody's stupid son or daughter was a commodity that could be traded for furniture or clothes or a trip to some resort, also government subsidized. You know, the union.
Your daughter was the commodity?
No. I'm not talking about myself. I'm just saying if somebody's child.
Oh, generally speaking. Okay, generally speaking. Okay, I gotcha.
Then you would have to pay or trade favors with somebody in order to put him or her there. That's what I was saying.
Uh-huh.
No. Uh-huh. My children luckily grew up already in the States.
Uh-huh.
Luckily, there are, it's a mixed blessing because public education system in this country is deplorable. And you probably realize that.
Mm-hmm.
I was really very disappointed when I found out what American public schools look like.
What brought you here? What brought you to the United States? And when did you come? What and when?
First, I came to New York in 1994. So it was, 17 years ago? Soon it will be 18 years ago. And I lived there until November of last year when I moved to Florida. So I'm in sunny South Florida. I'm in sunny Central Florida.
You know what? So am I. I didn't know that. I'm in Central Florida as well.
Really?
Yeah, I live on the East Coast, near Kennedy Space Center, Cape Canaveral, Cocoa Beach. Yep.
So we should meet.
Yep.
I know, we should.
you live around there?
Yeah. Florida is very slim, right? You could basically see there the coast from the porch.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. I'm actually staying in the Tampa area right now for a few weeks. That's funny. I didn't know you were in Central Florida. My producer said that this is the center of the universe, Florida is.
Yeah, it is.
It always seems that way.
Well, going on and our seats coming. So, yeah. You know what? The reason I moved to Florida, I couldn't stand New York any longer. Remember I told you how I was fooled by the propaganda in the USSR and I believed in socialism. And then I came to New York and everything there was so liberal, it was like one big liberal bubble, and I was fooled for the second time in my life by them. I didn't realize what was really going on in the country. At some point I started seeing New York as an occupied territory, and I felt as if I was some sort of an undercover agent there. And a few people, and some of them you know, are also from that area, are afraid to tell what their real political leanings are afraid to tell that they're bloggers, what they do, because they would lose their jobs, they would lose their customers. And that is a terrifying, chilling thing in the United States. So I met this beautiful woman from Florida who is a Tea Party activist. She's very smart, she's pretty, she's funny. She organized my book tour in Florida. I fell in love and we got married, and now I live in Florida. That's the story. And I'm sticking.
Oh, that's wonderful. You're sticking to it. You were actually on the Glenn Beck show one day. I saw you on the Glenn Beck show. How did that happen? How did you connect with that?
Oh, I don't know. I think actually my wife, who wasn't my wife then, she acted as my agent, and she sent an email to the Glenn Beck show saying that there was Oleg who deserves to be on your show. And I received an invitation from the producer, and at the time I still lived in New York, so actually I walked a couple of blocks to Glenn Beck's studio. It was in walking distance. Not anymore.
Not anymore, no. In fact, he's in Dallas now, so yeah, definitely not anymore. So tell us about your blog site. I mean, you started this, what, it's now 7 years old now?
Yes.
The People's Cube
is 7 years old, and that's in cube years, that's a lifetime. In square years.
Yeah.
And I'm posting the Howard Dress Square. If you go there, whatever is posted by Comrade Retzko, it's me. Whatever is posted by the Politburo is collaboration with me with somebody else. But I started it on my own, but then eventually I developed quite a great collective of the funniest and the most informed and witty people on the internet. And if you read comments, you will realize that how great they are. Well, you know, some are better than others, but mostly it's pretty high quality humor and satire. So not only I'm the author, there are a few dozen of them.
Well, one of them was Big Fur Hat, who left People's Cube and started I Own the World.
Yes, they started. I started getting an email from them, and Irony Curtin was the one who started emailing me, and then others joined, and we agreed that there were three friends, and they would join the Cube as a group under the title of Cagey Street. And it's like the KGB, but they were also very cagey. So the Cagey Street, I created a special corner for them, a section on the People's Cube where they were posting, and it was really great, but they were so productive and so prolific, so great, I couldn't keep up with all their submissions. And eventually, and there also their corner was kind of lost in the general site, and they made the right step and created their own blog eventually, and now they're running it, and it's so great. I'm so happy for them. They just today they sent me a really funny picture. Maybe they sent it to you as well. The composite sketch of Obama's imaginary girlfriend.
Oh yes.
His name is Larry.
Yes, I saw that. Is a funny one. He's wearing a wife beater T-shirt. No. You know, he's wearing a collared shirt and he's got the sunglasses hanging down. It's funny. It is a funny one.
That's real good. And we exchange ideas once in a while again, and they occasionally I use their ideas as a headline in the right hand column.
Now, do you do the People's Cube? I mean, this you're quite prolific as well. And so I'm wondering, I mean, is this a full-time job for you? Is this actually what you do, or do you do something else besides this? Because I would imagine this takes a lot of your time.
I do web design, graphic design, but yes, the People's Cube takes a lot of time, and unfortunately I cannot manage my time really well, so I tend to spend more time on the Cube. It's a little money in advertisements and sales in this online store, but that's not enough to pay the bills, and unfortunately, I have to sacrifice some of the comforts, the creature comforts. We lead a pretty frugal existence here because of that. Not able to make a lot of money, but we're pretty happy by doing what we're doing. It brings a lot of joy, so that's more important than a lot of money.
Yeah, that's true. You have quite an interesting style. I wanted to ask you also about this Obama campaign slogan, Forward. What did you think when you first heard that?
I've done, during my stint as a propaganda artist, I've done so many motivational propaganda posters with the word Forward. You won't believe it. So that's something that is very typical of propaganda. You know how propaganda works? It's usually a simplification of life. It's all two-dimensional. Usually the masses are described as small little stick figures, and the leaders are the big giants towering over them. That's how almost the vision of Obama over the crowds of supporters, his voters. Now, that Forward slogan, I created a thread, and I don't know if I can describe pictures over the radio. Let's see, where is the Forward with Obama, Mao, and Lenin. I just took an article from Front Page Magazine because it was very well written. I said that if I were to write an article about Obama's new slogan, it would have looked just like the one published in Front Page Mag by Danielle Greenfield. So all I had to do was illustrate it. And there is a picture. I'll try to describe it. The evolution chain, the monkey, then the ape, then the hominid, then early human, then modern human, walking in a straight line. So I describe them, and there is a road sign with an arrow pointing towards progress, like human progress, and they're going in that direction. And then there is Obama, and on the same pole there is another sign arrow pointing in a perpendicular direction that says progressive utopia. And that's where Obama is heading, away from the regular human progress. And he's stepping over the place.
I know that says it right there. I mean, that's exactly what it is. That's perfect. But you also had other illustrations that went with that particular post besides that, and I was looking at them. In fact, I used some of them. I grabbed them and used some of them to illustrate tonight's show on the show page. You've got the one. This is stunning. The one of Lenin pointing outward, saying forward, and then you use that frozen blue paint again. I'm kidding. To do the same thing with Obama. I mean, this is boy, oh boy, is this ever stunning. Do you ever get any blowback at all from the Obama people or the Obama supporters when you do something like this?
Occasionally I had a few invasions from the moon bats on the people's field. They would start posting some inflammatory idiotic things. But that doesn't happen very often. I haven't had much of a blowback. I don't know. I lost my job at some point. I don't know how whether it was connected to the state of the economy that Obama has created, or it was connected to my political activities. I don't know. At some point, I didn't want to disclose my real name. I was posting only as Red Square, but then I decided to start posting under my own name as well. You can Google Oleg and Bashian, it'll show you everything I do. So I don't think I'm very employable in New York now. But
yeah,
anyway, the picture that I did is a picture from the 30s with the, originally it wasn't showing Lenin, it was showing Karl Marx. But then I found a picture of Lenin that looked exactly like the picture of Obama pointing that finger. So I put them together, and they're almost identical figures, same dynamics.
Yeah.
So I put them over that picture of workers with banners that say tax the rich and spread the wealth and economic equality and fair share, and they're all running, following the leader's gesture, you know, the finger where he's pointing towards progress or whatever it is, and they're all falling over the cliff.
Yeah, that is a stunning visual. The next one that you have, you use the word forward, and describe for our listeners, if you can, what this series of figures, men, are doing.
Oh, these are the picture of Lenin, a classic Soviet poster picture of Lenin, showing people that they should go forward. And I just put a whole row of them, like the blind leading the blind, you know, holding each other by the shoulder. And the first one who approaches the edge of that block that says forward is falling down from it. And then everybody else follows because they just look forward under their feet. The chilling thing about what's going on is not just that Lenin's and Obama's, you know, going back to that comparison of the two posters, Obama and Lenin, it's not just that how visually similar it is. It's also how the situation in America right now reminds me more and more of the situation in Russia in prior to the October Revolution, the Communist Revolution. The same propaganda, the same slogans, the same attitudes among people, the same student riots, young people's dissatisfaction, the agitators, the party stirring the discontent, the unions who are helping the Communist Party to spread their propaganda and recruit members. The unions are all taking over by the left. The college professors who are all leftists and who agitate for change of the system. And it's all chillingly similar. And also, there were a few intellectuals, a few writers who were opposing the left in Russia prior to the revolution. And they were all ostracized by the same intellectuals, the academia, the art community. They were called conservatives. They were denied their rightful place in the pantheon of the classics of the Russian literature, for instance, like that's what happened to Nikolai Leskov, who is one of my favorite authors. That is, Lenin himself didn't actually study full time because of his political activity. He was always exiled because he was a rebel rouser, but the liberal professors liked his revolutionary activities and they gave him a diploma anyway. he was able to pass the tests without actually going to college. That's who
very,
knows
very
whatever he did there. And he also had legal education, just like Obama.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, here you leave the Ukraine, which was under the oppression, the yoke of the Soviet Union, to come to America, where you hope to find freedom, liberty, everything that, you know, the world looks to America as the beacon of light, and you get here and find out, oh, my God, we're already in the throes of heading in the same direction of the situation you came out of. You know, I wanted to ask you something else, too. It's just kind of out of left field, but I noticed that you have the I Am Breitbart store. You have that. You can click on it. And I wanted to ask you, you know, there's a lot of talk about what happened with him, how he just dropped suddenly. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but what do you think happened to him?
Oh, I'm not an expert, so I'm not the best authority on this. I met him several times. We were in, we called each other a few times. He invited me to write for a big Hollywood when it just opened and published a few pieces there. Unfortunately, I couldn't write very often. I would have published more. So we kind of had a not very close relationship. He was a busy man. I was pretty busy too. And unfortunately, I never had the time. There were a few times when I wanted to call him, and then I thought he's so busy, he's doing such an important work, I shouldn't disturb him with my little petty things. But now I regret it, because there will be, no longer be a time when I could call him. He's no longer there. That he just dropped dead suddenly among all this is, you know, even if you're not prone to conspiracy theories. I'm not. I'm very skeptical of all conspiracy theories, whether they come from the left or from the right. But even if you're immune to conspiracy theories, you would still wonder what happened there, because that's too convenient.
I know. This is yeah, really very convenient. This smacks to me of KGB activities, you know, in that his friends knew that he had a heart problem, and that means that his enemies knew it too. And what better way to cover it up than to make it appear as though it's a heart attack with no traces involved, you know?
Yeah, of course. And then the coroner died also from poisoning.
Yeah.
We examined him. you know, I was talking to my wife about perhaps the possibility of finding radioactive polonium in his system.
Yeah, like the Russian that they did that to, yes.
Right. It is pretty cheesy. But again, I can't really, I'm not an expert. I wasn't there. I don't have, you know, the right to really make.
Yeah, I know. A lot of speculation about that. It's a shame. It's an absolute shame. We lost a lion when we lost him. That's for sure.
I decided, you know, I have a friend, a journalist, Katie O'Malley, who wrote a very touching, great piece right after his death, a tribute to him, and in which said that nobody can replace him, but we need thousands of Breitbarts to take that place, and everybody now needs to become Andrew Breitbart. I am Andrew Breitbart, and we want to be Andrew Breitbart. So thinking about that, I created a series of designs that in a way remind of the famous iconic picture of Che Guevara that all leftists wear, you know, the two-color, almost like stencil image of the face. Staring into the distance, and the slogan, the captions that I have under that image say either I'm Breitbart, or it says fight the liberal establishment, or question the liberal media, or the Tea Party revolution, or the New American revolution, or conservative revolution. You know, there is a whole area of different captions.
Yeah.
So whatever you
prefer. So yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's a great, almost like a pen and ink kind of thing. Yeah, I like it a lot. So we should tell our listeners too that you do have a spot here where you sell articles like T-shirts and stickers, posters, buttons, all kinds of things, coffee mugs. And just go over to your site and just look at the sidebar, and you'll see all of the links that take you over to the shop.
Right now, I'll just make your job easier. Just now, I posted an advertising banner at the very top of the right-hand sidebar. Spreadshirt, where I have in my online store, has a Mother's Day promotion today, free shipping on orders over $30. So I posted links to my regular People's Keep store and to all in Breitbart store. So if somebody goes there and buys something, it will be free shipping. All you have to do is order two items, because anything is about like under $20. T-shirts.
All right. Okay, and we should tell the folks, too, that if you like the People's Cube, and I don't know why you wouldn't, click on the like button for the Facebook page and be part of what's happening over here at the People's Cube. Oleg, very interesting talking with you. I've been a fan of yours for quite some time, and when Big Fur suggested, why don't you get Oleg on the show, I said, you think he'd come on? He said, yeah. So I am glad you came.
Why not? Yeah, great. I'd love to post the podcast on the People's Cube, too. I have a special area where I post podcasts to my interviews, so send me the link later.
Okay, very good. We'll do.
Everyone who missed this show will be able to listen to it.
Well, that would be great, and we'll get together one of these times here in Central Florida. I'd love to meet you in person, and you know that Chris Muir also lives here in Central Florida as well. Mm. Chris Muir, who does the day-by-day cartoon.
Yeah, great. Yes. We should all get together, yeah. Why don't you organize the meeting?
I know, we could do that, and then we also have Kristen Taylor, who is Free Republic. He's the D.C. chapter. He's here in Central Florida, too. So there are a bunch of us here who are activists, as it were, and let's do that. We'll definitely have to get together and let's plan a party. Let's plan a People's Cube party.
Right, yeah, you bring the vodka, I bring potatoes and beets. How about that? A few Russian cards left.
That sounds great. Okay, all right, Oleg, I'm going to have to let you go. We're running out of time. Thanks again so much for calling in. I'm delighted that you made it. I'm so glad. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Good night, comrades.
Good night, comrades. До свидания. We'll see you later. Okay, take care. All right, everybody. Well, that will just about wrap it up for us for tonight. Tomorrow night, Doug Ross from directorblue.blogspot.com will be joining us. It seems like we have our bloggers on this week, which is a lot of fun. It really is. So we'll see you then. And all right, we'll see you then. Bye-bye, everyone.